Hi-dee-ho, Cuberinos. You've stumbled upon episode 1 of the Plaid Magic Thinking Inside the Box Magic the Gathering Cube podcast. Recording from balmy St. Cloud, Minnesota, this is co-host Mr. Macabre Man, joined by the ever-analytical Crow 13th.
Casting spells to completion.
And almost without exception, this will be the first installment of our audio-only podcast series where we plan to deep dive into some of the more engaging aspects of cube design. Today's episode is all about the ASFAN in cube. Not sure what the ASFAN is? Well, stay tuned because it's there whether you like it or not. And now, if you will, please join us as we think inside the box. Are you ready for the fight? Starting over, okay? You don't have to. Okay, so we're gonna say 1, 2, 3.
I didn't do it right at that time.
Okay, that one sounded way better than the one before, so let's try it again.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, clap. You clapped that time?
Yep.
We have not been able to secure Steve or Uncle Istvan for this podcast, but the show must go on. So we decided to just go through and get this recording out there because our fans await. We're gonna discuss ASFAN, ASDraft. First, we're gonna do a mailbag, and then we'll let you know what's coming up in future podcast series episodes. So without further ado, let's head right into the mailbag. So today we received, because today I asked for, mailbag item, which was, what are your thoughts on functional reprints? Open parentheses, Lightning Strike, Savannah Lions, Kadoma's Breach, being in the same cube, especially for small cubes, 360 to 450. So that's a question in and of itself, but we continue on here. What about strictly worse cards that have the exact same text or power toughness, but with either a higher mana cost or a missing upside being in the same cube together, like Searing Spear being in the same cube as Lightning Bolt or Incinerate? I have found that cutting as many doppelganger cards as I can has helped make a 360 cube feel like a 400 plus cube in terms of variety and replayability, but with the reliability of a 360 cube, and knowing that your archetype pillars are still going to show up. So there's four questions. There's like four questions there, I believe.
Something like that.
So functional reprints within the same cube. Let's hit that one up first.
Well, I do think it's beneficial to avoid functional reprints. Sometimes it makes sense because you want to have certain strategies have a little bit more consistency in them. So things like Wrath of God, if you have a cube that really relies on white having those Wrath of God effects. Honestly, I just think you might as well put two Wrath of Gods in there. But, you know, there is a benefit of having two different varieties of Wrath of Gods in regards to, like, Day of Judgment, I should say.
So I do have a question here because the actual cards that were listed in the question when after functional reprints were Lightning Strike, Savannah Lions, and Kadoma's Reach. So Savannah Lions, to the best of my knowledge, does not have a functional reprint.
No, there is one.
Oh, well, no, not. So I guess. So you've got the question between Savannah Lions or that knight, right?
Right.
But ultimately, he's like a knight or a soldier, which may have some other possible relevance that Savannah Lions almost certainly doesn't. Like, I don't think, other than nostalgia purposes, I don't think you can run Savannah Lions over, you know, something that is running a more relevant archetype, or a higher possibility of an archetype being relevant, of a creature type, I'm sorry. So it's not really, it's the same thing with you've got Sackbag, what is it called? Fleshbag Marauder, and there's that new executioner, which is a functional reprint, but the creature types are different, so that may or may not be relevant. A zombie creature type is generally more relevant.
Right.
It's not apples to apples. There are differences there, and I think that you should take those into account, but if there's no difference between the two, I guess you can swap them out for variety purposes. Different art, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, it's almost like when you have just a good card cube, I mean, everything essentially fits into the same, you know, stream of cards. They, you know, it's almost like having a functional reprint when you have all the different types of counter spells. They all do functionally the same thing. In the end, the variations of how they function don't necessarily matter. Not a lot. So I think it's more or less, if you're going that close, I think it's more important that you want to find versions of that card that do drastically different things in different board states. I don't like it when you have, you know, 15 different Savannah Lion reprints that are slightly different, but the majority of the time their upside doesn't matter. I don't think it's necessarily that beneficial. You might as well just find the best one of them and then put, you know, 15 copies of that one best one in the cube.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, I don't think that, I think that there generally is the right card for it. So that might either be a card that is more powerful than, Savannah Lions, or it might be less powerful in your cube than Savannah Lions. It's finding the right power level because, and the card I couldn't remember before is Elite Vanguard. So,
right.
Elite Vanguard, for example, I would not count that in the functional reprint section because it's one white for a 2/1, but it is a human soldier. So, if that's not a thing at all in your cube, like it doesn't care if it's a cat or a lion or a human or a soldier, there's literally zero tribal effects. Then you just use whichever one you prefer. You like the art of Savannah Alliance, you like the nostalgic value, but it's not really the same card in that instance. So, and that might be the case. You may not want extra zombies in your cube, and so you have a cube that does want whatever the new flesh bag marauder card type is over a zombie card type, and so that's a better choice. So that's what I would say there. I mean, it seems like it should make itself evident if you review what your cube is, what it supports, what you need, what you don't need. I think that makes itself relevant. So we can move into the next section of that question. What about strictly worse cards? Cards that have the exact same power toughness with either higher mana cost or missing upside, being in the same cube together, like Searing Spear, being in the same cube as Lightning Bolt or Incinerate. So this falls back into the Savannah Lions question, obviously, and at this point, probably everyone should have removed Savannah Lions from their cube, and either just doubled up on better stuff, or they're playing a nostalgia cube. I don't know, but there's certainly plenty of 2/1 for one white mana with upside. There's enough now that you don't need that guy. At this point, you just break Singleton, I think. But this specific question here, the example that's being given, Searing Spear in the same cube as Lightning Bolt or Incinerate, that's interesting because that we don't have Searing Spear in our cube, but this type of question has come up before for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you have to evaluate what you're doing. I do think that putting different varieties of, you know, direct damage spells into your cube that have additional functionalities in them is a lot better than just putting in, you know, more of the vanilla stuff. So I guess for me, like, I would rather just, instead of just having a vanilla direct damage spell like Searing Spear, have something that, you know, maybe does two damage and then, you know, has an additional effect on it. So you have like the scry one and you have, you know, a couple of different instances. I just think it adds more variety, a little bit more interaction. You know, it depends on what your target cube members are. You know, if you're working with a group of people that are less experienced, you know, just trying to get them more familiar with the limited format, then I could see doing it. But for the most part, you know, everyone's there. They understand how the cards work. And the reason why Searing Spear is put into limited formats is because they just want something that's simple. They don't want every card to have, you know, an effect attached onto it.
Right, and I guess the argument there would be that, so if you don't want to add complexity and have those cards that have extra effects tacked onto them, but at the same time you don't want to throw six lightning bolts into your cube because you don't want to extend the power of burn beyond a certain point. That's also a valid argument, but I think that you're absolutely correct that there's enough room. I mean, cubes are not infinite landscapes. You know, there is a limit to them. And I think there's enough room for having, cards with possible upside, like contextual upside, that aha moment. We just actually, in our cube, we just swapped out Incinerate finally for Volt Charge, I think. Obviously, because we're running a Counters Matter cube, so it's Burn plus Proliferate. So that's a big deal for us. I don't know that it's going to play a ton better, but it has a possibility of being played and more upside, because we have like three cards with the possibility to regenerate. It's like Varl's, Lotleth Troll, and maybe Experiment One.
Yeah,
I think that's it. So the Incinerate upside, I mean, it was for all intents and purposes a Searing Spear in our cube. So that's why I say this has come up in the context of our cube. We were running Searing Spear up until, you know, a month ago. So the comment I think that he lists after this just goes over sort of what we talked about. So I found that cutting as many doppelganger cards as I can has helped make my 360 cube feel like a 400 plus cube in terms of variety and replayability. But with the reliability of a 360 cube, knowing what archetype pillars are going to show up. So that's what we went through with several cards recently swapping out. I don't think we have any duplicate cards now in the cube other than the fetch lands, right?
Yeah, the fetch lands are the only ones.
Yeah, exactly. So we had some doubles in the cube before. They have all been removed. We've found spots. We have enough cards that we really, really want to at least try out at this point. Cutting up the copies of cards, trying to, you know, the varying types of the same effect. So the direct damage pieces that are one or two mana. We cut a two mana burn spell, Incinerate, for a three mana Volt Charge. And I think that that has really added some depth and some possibility. And there are some really cool incidental possibilities for that. So I think we're on the same page there, with keeping the reliability while the replayability stays intact.
Well, I think like Tezzeret's Gambit's a good example, where it's a seemingly worse card than, you know, one of the draw spells we had taken out.
Which, by the way, for those of you listening, was swapped in to replace Show and Tell.
Right.
So
obviously there's a big power level difference, but Show and Tell really wasn't doing a lot of work. So it's obviously one of those cards which power level is based off of the power of other cards in your cube. So because we have a slightly powered down cube, it's not as great. But yeah, Tezzeret's Gambit on the face level really doesn't look like that great of a card. But when you have a cube in which, you know, counters matter, and then also the fact that it's just versatile, a lot of other colors. I think that card probably doesn't get played in blue most of the time. And then you tack on that additional effect. We really were reluctant on putting it in, but once we finally put it in, it, you know, did a lot more work than we expected, and I think that's one of the benefits you get with just trying out some of the maybe seemingly less powerful cards, but have, you know, slightly different abilities or effects tacked onto them. You discover some of these key cards that really work in your cube. Maybe they don't work in everyone's cube, but they really seem to have a place and find a particular niche in your cube.
Right. In fact, I was actually surprised. For those of you who don't know, we actually do a daily pick one, pack one for the Plaid Magic Counters Matters cube. And I've actually been surprised how much feedback we've gotten on packs containing Tezzeret's Gambit. Talking about, so maybe not pick one, pack one, but just, you know, leaving a message that, oh, by the way, Tezzeret's Gambit is awesome in cube. And that's exactly one of those sleeper hit cube cards that I think really gets... I mean, I slid by it. It was not until you brought it up to me, Andy, that I saw the power of that card. And so, but I've heard a lot of good feedback on that.
Yep.
So I think that we shall move into our primary section for today, our main topic, which is the Azfan. So, for those of you who are not familiar, I will read a pre-written script and describe what an Azfan is. So, Azfan is a term that Wizards RMD uses to refer to the contents of an opened booster pack. To put it simply, it's the number of cards on average that you can expect to see in any given booster pack that fit the given criteria. An Azfan of 2, for example, means that the pack will typically have 2 cards that fit the given criteria. So, what does that mean in terms of cube and magic in general? So, Azfan is a mathematical calculation using probability to determine how often somebody will see something in a pack. So that something could be, for example, in Innistrad Limited, the Azfan of the... are they called flip cards? Are they called transform cards? I think it's transform, right? The transform cards had an Azfan of 1. So, because each pack contained exactly 1 transform card at the end of the pack. So, that's a easy, clear-cut example. Another example is, I think, Return to Ravnica had exactly 1 land, right, at the end?
Well, they all have 1 land, but this one had a 1 of the common dual lands.
Or one of the shock lands.
Yep.
Right. So mana fixing. So the mana fixing Azfan was 1.
Right. I think it was Dragon Maze.
So that could be. Yeah, sure. So what that comes down to for limited environments, so that's one way to calculate it. So you can say, okay, so mana fixing or transform cards. But you could also say cards that are support cards for a specific archetype. So they could be like storm support cards or aggro cards or white aggro cards. You know, you can calculate the Azfan for just about anything to understand how well you are providing resources for a specific archetype or resource, as well as how well you are demonstrating that to your drafters. So, are you showing them that this is indeed a thing in this limited format? So, if you have 2 cards that say Storm on it per pack, your drafters are certainly going to know that Storm is a thing in your cube, and they will probably leave.
Right.
So, but that's what it is. So it's two pieces. So it's a piece for building. It's a tool for building to understand, am I providing adequate resources to support something that I would like to support and see active in my cube environment? As well as, are my drafters able to see what it is that I have as a vision and know that they can count on something being supported that they're seeing? So the more occurrences that you see of, you know, 2-power-1 drops, the more likely you are to have drafters that are going to understand that you've got some sort of aggro or tempo build available to them. And so they'll feel secure in drafting that archetype. That's why the Azfan is actually really powerful. So the Azfan exists whether or not you care about it or have looked into it.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as... So with an actual constructed limited set that, you know, comes out through Wizards, the Azfan is used more as a tool to kind of gauge a few varieties of different pillars that, you know, are used to construct a limited environment. You know, rare is typically something that is used more of your bombs or your more gimmicky cards or cards that really don't fit in any particular way. And then you have the other far end of the spectrum where you have common. And common's more used for cards that really make the foundation that of things that are needed in every limited environment. But more importantly, there are cards that can go in multiple different decks, even if they aren't necessarily all that great. You typically have your more vanilla creatures in there, but they fit in a lot of different decks. And when you get into the uncommon area, that's where you start getting into slightly more powerful cards. But really what it's used for is to push the drafter in a particular direction. So obviously that doesn't really work out in a cube. But the core concepts of what you're trying to do, in a sense, will, if you're thinking about strictly percentages. So in most cubes, when you're looking at it, what you're thinking about is that you don't want to push the different, like in our cube, where you really focus on when putting cards in the cube of, you know, your guilds, so 2-color combinations, decks, but we don't put a very high percentage of cards for every guild in a particular color. You know, the gold section is fairly small. And the reason is that we don't want to force the player to, you know, you don't want to try to railroad your player into a particular direction. So by knowing that, well, the Azfan is fairly low for a given guild, then it allows your drafter to go through each pack and not feel like, well, I picked my first Azorius card, so now I'm going to always have to draft this particular deck.
Right. I'm interested, actually. So one thing that you said, and maybe I'm not meant to highlight this, but you said before that you know, with regards to the gold cards, that you obviously it doesn't work. So in a normal set, you use it to push drafters in a certain direction. You said, obviously, that's not possible in cube, or that's not the case in cube. What do you mean by that? Like, because obviously, we do try to push.
I was more saying that it's not possible to use the uncommon section to...
Okay.
Put drafters in a particular archetype in cube because there isn't an uncommon section. You can't, you know, that's the part where, you know, when talking about Azfan in a cube, you really can't think about it as uncommon and common. Your calculations are quite a bit different and really start getting to, you know, what the end draft looks like. But
Okay.
So when you're looking at a cube, that's where you're more looking at a percentage of the whole cube and the end result, because in our particular draft environment, all the cards get drafted, those archetypes are going to pan out. Where Wizards has to, you know, they don't control what's in each pod, you know, drafting pod, you know, they can't guarantee that a given uncommon is going to show up in a given pod. So what they can do is control the percentages of what type of cards are in what percentage of a pack. And that's how they guide players into a particular archetype, but not railroad them and say, well, now I have to do this.
Right. And that's actually the super interesting part, because as a cube developer, as most cube developers, including ourselves at Plaid Magic, we have a much easier job of this. The algorithm for the Azfan is much easier, because you just have 360 cards, and you have, on average, 8 players drafting 3 15-card packs. So the Azfan is super easy to calculate. What Andy's bringing out here is that, so now you have this additional aspect of rarity, and that's where it really breaks apart. So you cannot calculate, you can't look at two sets, like the list of cards in Innistrad and compare it to the list of cards in your cube and calculate Azfan there, because you're seeing more occurrences of certain cards than other cards in a regular Magic set. And that's important to note. So, because as we brought up, so we took a look at the amount of removal in our cube, and that was based on an article which I will put in the show notes here, but it was based on an article talking about the amount of removal and how it affects a limited environment. And they compared the removal in their cube to the removal in Innistrad, triple Innistrad, and in triple
Rise of the Eldrazi.
Sure.
Basically, the two sets are considered the best drafting formats.
Sure. Best limited environment, whatever, other than Plaid Magic Cube. And but the difference is, to get those numbers, to understand what the average occurrence of a piece of removal is in those two sets, is much different than understanding what the average amount of removal is in a 15 card pack in a cube. Because if you have a 360 cube, you just calculate how many pieces of removal there are total, and then you split it up to 15 card packs. It's a very easy calculation. However, in the case of Innistrad, now you have to take into account rarity. So, if you have something like, or for example, I brought up Return to Ravnica. So now you have, if you're trying to calculate removal that occurs in Return to Ravnica, you have Abrupt Decay, which is a piece of removal, which is at a rare slot, and then you have other cards in Return to Ravnica that are removal at a common slot. And so you need to take that into account, how often, because you have most of the cards in the pack, in the 15 card pack, are going to be common level, and you have to take that into account. So we have the advantage in most cubes. There are some cubes that actually have common, uncommon, and rare slots, and that's how they actually develop their cube based on that, to keep certain types of rarity ratios in play, and they break singleton for that. But it's important to note that for the purposes of developing a standard singleton cube, the calculation is different than when you are comparing it to an actual Wizards of the Coast released limited environment. That is because of that rarity difference. I don't know, because I made that mistake actually. So when we talked about, like, what was the Azfan of Counters Matters in our cube versus the Death Matters in Innistrad, I did not take that into account. It looked like we actually had a higher level of Counters Matters than the death matters within Innistrad. But I was not actually taking into account that aspect of rarity.
Right. And yeah, and the other thing that you have to keep in mind when you're looking at the differences between an actual limited environment and when you're looking at cube is that there's certain things that wizards can get away with as far as what shows up in, you know, the rare slot. Because if they put it at mythic rare, it's like considered like a half a percentage of what you would get for a given rare, to see a given rare. So I think it's even more than that. So if they put it in mythic rare, it's not going to show, the odds of someone getting a given planeswalker in a particular pod is fairly low. But when you look at a cube, especially 360, where you're expected to draft the whole thing, you can't get away with that. So when you're, you know, constructing your cube and you're thinking, well, I should be able to put this Black Lotus in there and no other pieces of power and be fine because it's only one, it doesn't work that way. That obviously seems obvious, but it is an important point to bring up. But it goes the other way too. If you just stick a large number of a particular card in your cube, it doesn't necessarily always get to the same drafter, so you can't assume that there's enough of a particular type of card in your cube to, you know, let's put it this way. If I want to support Infect in my cube, you can't just put a, you know, 15 Infect cards in your cube and think, well, that's enough, I should be fine. That's why Infect usually
doesn't... It's more than enough. It's more than enough.
Well, well, maybe 15, but you can't put... I guess I was thinking, like, with the pump spells and everything.
I was just thinking you shouldn't do that, and so 15... It's like 15 more cards than you should have with Infect in your cube. But whatever. To each is their own.
Well, I guess I'm getting at this is the reason why Infect isn't in cubes. It's because the type of cards and all the supporting casts of cards and the number of good Infect cards...
And the level of fun involved.
Right. It doesn't work in cube unless you really break a lot of rules and you make it so the draft pods are very weird. Because the fact of the matter is you have to put so many in there because it just won't always get to the same drafter. And if it doesn't get to the same drafter, then they don't have a deck. So that's the reason why those types of linear strategies typically don't work in a cube, but will work in a given limited environment.
That's an interesting point. I had not thought of that. I had not thought of that, actually. That's cool. Yeah. Okay, so let's move into, let's get out of this, what it is and what it is not, and go into the use cases, the actual, you know, down to the grit. How am I going to use Azfan to make my cube better? So, I had mentioned to Andy that Azfan can be used in two different styles. So one Azfan, so understanding the Azfan is one way, in one mode, is to understand, am I providing enough of something to the cube in general that will just exist? And the best example of that I could think of was mana fixing. So I can calculate the number and understand how many mana fixers I'm providing to my drafters in any given pack, which will in turn mean that my drafters can use multicolored decks easily. The second mode of it is, what am I telling my players about, my drafters, about this limited environment? And so that's the second important aspect of ASFAN as far as I'm concerned. So mana fixing and archetype support are those two different modes of the ASFAN that I think are super important. So for our cube, we have a ton of fixing. So we doubled up on fetch lands. We have one copy of every shock land and one copy of every actual dual land. And that's where we sit for our 360 cube. So we're averaging, I think the ASFAN is right about 2 for mana fixing. And that's just providing support to my players. Like, this is just going to happen. You're going to get mana fixing in basically every pack that you open. And you're probably going to get past another piece of mana fixing at least in your first pack that gets passed around. And you're most likely going to see it throughout, you know, the, certainly in the first, like, after the first 4 or 5 picks, you're almost certainly going to see some piece of mana fixing, whether or not it fits what you're building. And that's just there for the players to have access to. It's not to say, oh, this is a thing, mana fixing is a thing. It's just to provide support for something. And then the second piece is archetype support, which is I am seeing multiples. I'm seeing a certain level of support for an archetype. That archetype might be Blink or Storm or Aggro or Tokens or Counters or whatever. So that's what we want to talk about now. So the mana fixing piece, I don't think we have to speak much about. It's just where, how much of that underlying aspect of our cube do we want to just give access to our drafters. The archetype support is probably the more important aspect of the more interesting aspect, rather, of ASFAN and the cube as far as use cases.
Yeah, and so one thing with mana fixing is that I think it's important what type of mana fixing you have in the cube. I think we had alluded to earlier that we doubled up on the fetch lands. The reason being is that we wanted players to be able to not only draft 2-color decks, but 3-color decks if they wanted to.
And five colors.
They can draft 5 colors. The archetypes that we have inserted into the cube are more focused on the 2-color combination, but they synergize fairly well together. And the fact that we have the double on the fetch lands allows us to provide support to the more aggressive strategies as well. In a lot of cubes, they always struggle with, well, I have to provide support for, let's say, the mono red deck. And to be able to do that, the reason why I have to provide support for the mono red deck or the mono white deck, like the white weenie strategy, is because once you start adding multiple colors, you're not reliably going to have the mana fixing to, you know, hit your one drops. But because we double up on the fetch lands, it's essentially like playing a mono red deck or a monocolor deck when you're doing Rakdos, because of the fact that we have so much mana fixing that is fast and efficient.
Yeah, and we just didn't want that to be like, I mean, it's certainly a thing. I saw on a Reddit post recently, there was a cube that was posted that was called the Desert Cube. And the whole aspect of that cube was to limit the number of resources. And so it's across the board. Basically, you have to draft your basics within the cube draft itself. I think it was just a conscious decision that we did not want that to be a thing. We wanted people to build decks around spells that they liked, and that they had fun playing. And we did not want the mana fixing. I mean, even a basic focus, like a minimal focus on the fixing aspect of our cube will net you what you need to do to play the deck you want to play.
Right, but you can do the same thing with a comes into play tap land, you know. The key is that we wanted the aggressive decks to also be in multicolors as well. Because it throws off the draft in our cube so much when you have a monocolor deck in there. Just because I don't think it's as powerful. And because we don't provide any of the cards that, you know, are heavy in one color. You know, obviously the cards with three red mana symbols tend to be more powerful, but they're meant for the mono red deck, and we didn't want to really push our drafters in that direction. And I think that was the biggest reason why we doubled up on the fetch lands, particularly. Because like you said, you can put the scry lands in there, and it's technically mana fixing, and we could have doubled up on it. But the point is that we wanted to have efficient mana fixing. We wanted to have the best mana fixing. So by doubling up on the fetches, you don't have this scenario where, well, if I'm playing the aggressive deck, I can't really draft a two-color or a three-color deck because I won't consistently hit my one-drops. Where doubling up on the fetches provides the means for the aggressive decks to draft two or even three colors and still be aggressive and consistently hit their one-drops.
Right, and I think that plays into the... We just did not want that to be a thing, you know. We just wanted it to be there. You certainly have to draft mana fixing, but if you do, if you have the focus on that, if you understand that I've got an aggressive deck and I need to be able to lay... I need to be able to curve out that we actually have what is required to do that available to you as long as you're paying any attention. Like, that's just something we chose not to have, something that you struggle for in our cube.
Right. And then as far as archetype support goes, you know, with our cube, we've kind of stumbled into the concept of breaking it down with the thought process of Azfan in mind, in which, you know, you kind of take the hints that Wizards provides with the idea of, at the uncommon level, that's where your archetypes reside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because when you have a limited environment, you don't want to railroad your drafters. And if you have your archetype at common level, and you have, let's say, a strong elf theme, it's going to railroad your drafters if at common you have cards that care how many elves you have in play. Because, well, now I'm going to draft this card, and the next pack I'm going to draft another elf, and the next pack I'm going to draft another elf, because there will always be an elf in that pack. Or there will just be dead cards that I don't want to draft in that pack, because I've drafted all the elves. So by keeping it at the uncommon level, the drafters, sure, they'll get their elf card that cares about how many elves they'll have, but at the common level, they'll maybe be some elves, but you'll draft some non-elves as well. Magic Origins is a perfect example of, you know, I believe the black-green deck is not exactly that great, but, you know, that is an example of you're not going to have a deck full of, you know, you're probably not going to get 10 elves in your limited deck in that format, because the elves in that format, either at common level, aren't necessarily all good, or the payoff to it isn't that great. But the power level of the archetype elves at uncommon don't necessarily need you to go all in, but just provide an extra boost. And so how that works with cube is you can't look at it as uncommon and common, but you can look at it as percentage. So when you're looking at a given archetype, how much support you want to give to a specific archetype is going to be a smaller percentage, and you want to have that smaller percentage of cards still be good if you don't get all of the cards that necessarily fit into that particular archetype.
Right. So I think this is super important, and I want to highlight this because I feel like what we call archetypes might also be considered in other cubes to be packages. Right. So these are the cards that work with this. And that might be actually be true. But with regards to comparing Azfan in cube, so for example, our cube, I feel like there's a stigma in the cube community about themed cubes. So, and the common themed cube idea is like, recreating a set environment. So Triple Innistrad as a cube theme, or say, artifacts as a cube theme. So we picked Counters Matters, and I would like to hear what you have to say about, the rarity type and how that plays into actual Wizards of the Coast limited environments, and how the Counters Matters theme works into our cube.
Right, so in a given Wizards limited environment, like I said, your archetypes are going to generally live at uncommon. And these are, like I said, with the elf example. And those cards, those cards are what hint a player to go into a particular direction. But at common, you want to have more cards that, you know, they'll fit in the deck, but don't necessarily tell you, I need to get more elves. They are the cards that, you know, they're elves, but they're good by themselves. So in our cube, we have a Counters Matter theme, and that's really where our uncommon level exists. And why it's important in our cube is because it provides a means of having something that's powerful, but not necessarily uncommon or rare powerful. They're more of your vanilla creatures. But in a given archetype, maybe a specific type of counter card is going to be more powerful in your deck than the other drafters.
You would say that the counters theme of our cube is that uncommon level. So it's like a pointing in a direction, but not necessarily.
No, it's a common level.
Common level. Okay.
It's a common level. Okay. So in a given Wizards environment, at common level, you're going to have your vanilla creatures that maybe have elf tacked onto it.
Right.
A given drafter is going to draft that elf, even if they aren't in the elf deck, if they need a 2-drop, let's say. But the elf deck is going to draft it and prioritize it a little bit higher. So let's look at Sandstep Outcast.
Yes, let's.
So Sandstep Outcast is, you know, a 3-mana 2/1 that could come into play with a +1/+1 counter or put a 1/1 spirit token into play. Now, this card isn't particularly powerful and doesn't necessarily put you in a particular archetype. It would be what I would call a vanilla creature in our cube, for all intents and purposes. But if you're playing the green-red Counters Lord deck, you're going to probably prioritize it a little bit higher than the blink deck, the blue-white blink deck. Because blinking it and getting a token every turn is powerful, but it doesn't necessarily give you the amount of powerful. It's not going to be necessarily as powerful as having the option of, you know, spreading out your creatures and doing what you, and, or having the option to have a 3-drop with a counter on it. Much like when you're looking at, which is a lot different than when you're looking at, you know, something in blue-white where I take Venser and that's going to put me into the blink deck. Or you take a Flicker Wisp that's going to put me in the blink deck. That is not something that the counters deck is going to want to draft ever. So that's what I'm talking. So the counters really just provide a synergistic effect across the different archetypes, but don't necessarily get prioritized higher by any given archetype. It's more what they need at that time in that given draft spot. Do they need a 3-drop? Do they need a creature that comes in with the counter? Do they need to spread out their resources? It all depends on where they're at in that point in the draft.
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, so I think that answers the question, and that's the most interesting thing. So in Wizards has the ability to have these different rarity levels, and that's how they can guide in different tiers of drafting. And so for us, at the common level, we have the theme. And I think that's often the case. So the theme is the common level, and then uncommon, you have some sort of guidance towards some more powerful existing strategies. And then at rare, you have the aspect of some powerful cards, a few powerful cards that you could draft around, but you couldn't like count on getting them, but they still exist as a powerhouse that supports the lower two tiers. And I actually don't know how you do that outside of a themed cube.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, I think, and that's why...
Sorry, let me rephrase. I guess what I'm saying is that every cube is themed, obviously, to a certain extent, so it's either themed by the fact that it's powered or whatever, but specifically I'm saying that there's a baseline across the board, a pre-existing underlying glue that connects everything together, and that's the part I'm a little bit spoiled. I'm spoiled in that with that there. I know what I'm putting in new cards, when I'm evaluating new cards from new sets, that those archetypes, those things exist already, and it makes it very easy to take a look at whatever new cards, new archetypes, abilities that I can easily evaluate as far as their viability in our cube, the possibility of included, and I don't think that exists outside a theme cube. In vanilla cubes, vanilla part cubes, whatever, it's a great tool for us to have that baseline archetype, that baseline theme to make judgment call on new cards and old cards.
Well, and also you understand what percentages you have available in your cube for a given card. Like right now, we're kind of sitting in a spot in red where the just good 4-drop red slots are really hard to find now.
I think that's magically.
Right. but, you know, we made a decision very early on that as far as planeswalkers go, we only wanted to have one in each color.
Right.
And we did fit a few of them in a given archetype, so in two color combinations as well, if we thought it was relevant for that given archetype. So we did this purposely because we like the idea of planeswalkers, but we didn't want someone to draft a Super Friends deck.
And they did.
Yeah, they still do, but it's really hard and you can't count on getting them. Like, for the most part, if you open a pack with a planeswalker and there isn't anything necessarily pushing you in a given archetype, or there isn't anything that you really want to build around, you're just going to take the planeswalker.
Right. Right.
So the odds of one drafter getting three is not very good. The only deck that I saw that was considered the Super Friends deck, like you're talking about, I think only had two. So it really just, you know, that's a way for us to control. So when, you know, new planeswalkers come out, we know we only have these many slots. It's easier for us to evaluate, you know, what cards come in, which cards come out. And it's also a way for us to control the environment, knowing that the ASVAN of a given planeswalker is very low, and we don't have to worry about having too many ways to deal with them. Although we do put quite a few ways for our drafters to deal with them, so that they don't completely engulf a given game or board state.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, last question here. So, how important do you think it is to use the ASFAN? So, I've got these statistics. I've got actual numbers related to supported archetypes. How important do you think it is to use that in conjunction with just discussing how players felt after a draft or after a play session for the cube to say, why did you pick, I saw that you passed Parallax Wave on a second pack and you were in blue-white. Those types of things. So do you think it's important to review with the players and the drafters afterwards in addition to collecting data with regards to the ASFAN?
Well, I mean, in general, I mean, it just depends on what you feel like doing in a given draft. So I don't know that necessarily that type of information helps. I do think it matters when you're, after the draft's over and someone decided that they were going to play, green, blue. And they said, I didn't really understand what direction I was supposed to go. I didn't feel like the power level was there or something like that. And you start, maybe you go back and you start looking at Simic and you say, well, the ASFAN for cards that it's meant to do isn't high enough here.
Right.
We need to support it a little bit more. Or we say, there really aren't enough cards to support this given archetype. We need to try to put in a different archetype. I think that was the case with Is It? And we
totally
slowly have restructured it and, pushed a little bit more. Now I think it's a viable strategy. It's one of the more difficult decks to draft. You have to have a pretty good knowledge of what to prioritize. But for the most part, it's an archetype that you can do, and it will definitely win you games.
Right.
Yeah, I want to draft it for sure.
Yep.
So I think that's it for ASFAN. We're at about an hour. It's our limit. It's time to go to bed. As you can tell, we're pretty sleepy. Thank you all for that. Next up, we're gonna an episode about breaking the rules. We're gonna discuss common preconceptions and misconceptions of cube design, discussing what the rules are, which allows you to break the rules. Once you know, that show will be around August 27th, and after that, we're gonna do a Twitch video podcast. That'll be our next video podcast. Thank you all once again. You can follow us at Plaid Magic on Twitter. Andy here is at Crow13th.
Yep.
At Mr. McCobb. We'll post all of the links and resources related to this podcast in the show notes. We'll see you next time, 2 weeks or so, with Uncle Listy.
Huzzah.